Welcome to Christmas Shopping Part 2. This time it's all about the deal hunters and gift card redeemers. From APM American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Adrienne Hill. It's Monday, December 26th. Coming up, the world's second and third largest economies strike a currency deal. And it's been 20 years since the collapse of the Soviet Union. It's just gotten better for American companies doing business in Russia. Plus, there's a sheep-stealing epidemic in the UK. Those stories and more, just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Wake up to the day's top business headlines. Subscribe to the Marketplace Morning Report podcast. It's on iTunes and marketplace.org/podcasts.
This holiday shopping season has a sequel. It starts today, a Monday, where a whole lot of people are home from work with shiny new gift cards and dreams of 2-for-1 sweaters and 60% off scarves. Some analysts expect today will be among the very busiest mall days of the year. But all you bargain hunters, be wary. You're going to be competing with the folks looking to return that baby blue bathrobe and some people willing to brave the crowds to get an even bigger discount on the stuff they already bought before Christmas. Marketplace's Jennifer Collins explains.
You've probably had this feeling before.
Great prices. I just wish you could guarantee me they won't be beat.
Even by the store you're in. In an age of constant discounts, stores like Kohl's, Banana Republic, Sears, and Abercrombie & Fitch all offer shoppers something called price protection or price adjustments. Wendy Liebman of WSL Strategic Retail says if you buy something and a week or two later the store's selling it at a lower price,
if you're willing to come back, we'll give you the sale price.
Liebman says lots of people don't know about the policy or don't want to hassle with the return. Retail consultant Joel Bynes of Alex Partners says many stores have had tacit policies like this for years.
What they're doing now is they're just publicizing this as yet another marketing tool to give consumers the comfort that they're going to get a good deal if they shop at that particular retailer.
Bynes says many of the price adjustments are offered as store credit. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
And it ought to be easy going when it comes to getting to the mall today. Not a lot of severe weather to report, at least right now. Snowfall's been tough to come by this year, and that's not the only weather weirdness. 2011 has been a record-breaking year for extreme weather in the U.S. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Eve Tro recaps the disasters and tallies the cost.
The weather in 2011 often seemed out of place. A nor'easter in Atlanta, hurricane winds in Vermont, killer tornadoes in Alabama.
This is a large tornado on the ground headed towards the city of Tuscaloosa. You see something like this out on the Great Plains, the Central Plains.
Cities that never saw that kind of weather didn't have equipment or money set aside to respond. Add that to worse than expected floods, tornadoes, and wildfires in the usual places, and you get a record economic hit.
We're looking at approximately $35 billion in insured catastrophe losses.
Bob Hartwig at the Insurance Information Institute says companies would have paid more if the disasters had been double whammies.
You cited the wildfires in Texas, but at the same time, there were very few fires in California. We had a hurricane in the Northeast, but we didn't have one in Florida.
But he says extreme weather and cost is on the rise overall. Kevin Kennedy at the World Resources Institute says that's climate change in action.
It's not just some small temperature increase over the course of a few decades. It really is a disruption of the normal weather patterns. It means unpredictability and very real risk.
Risk that we all pay for eventually. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
Now to the Marketplace global perspective on business and economics. China and Japan have announced plans today to allow a direct exchange of their currencies. This means firms in China and Japan can convert their currencies directly without first converting to U.S. dollars. We've got the BBC's Andrew Wood now from Hong Kong to help sort it all out for us. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning.
So can you explain exactly what this currency deal is?
Well, it's a big chance at the world's second and third biggest economies, namely China's the second biggest, Japan's the third biggest, to deal directly with each other. And it's a way that they can basically sideline the US dollar when they're doing trade deals, and they can avoid an awful lot in risks in terms of currencies going up and down, namely the US dollar going up and down. And it's a way that they can save money on transaction costs as well. It's a way also as well that Japan is also showing quite a bit of confidence in the Chinese economy, the Chinese government bonds, for example, to show that the Japanese are quite confident that China is a reasonable country to do business with now, that it's much more confident in the state of the Chinese economy.
And why strike this deal now?
In Japan and in China, the Christmas period is not very important. So it's a great time, perhaps, to surprise people in the West by announcing this deal. And next year, don't forget, 2012 is the 40th anniversary of normalization of relations, diplomatic relations between the mainland of China and Japan. In Asia, anniversaries are very important. So it's a great time to start announcing this prior to the anniversary year.
And what's the significance for the broader global economy?
Well, if you've got two of the world's biggest economies dealing direct with each other, then that tells you something about where trade flows are going. I mean, China and Japan, they're very important trade partners. So you're talking about $340 billion of trade every year. It's not a great sign for the dollar. I mean, it does give a sort of indication that perhaps, you know, people are becoming less confident in the ability for the dollar to retain its value. You know, it's a sign that perhaps the world is trying to diversify, to shift away from America, and that their confidence has been shaken.
The BBC's Andrew Wood, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Russians took to the streets this weekend. They're calling for a new election and the ouster of Prime Minister Vladimir Putin. The wave of protests is being called the biggest since a collapse of the Soviet Union almost exactly 20 years ago. That anniversary marks the end of the USSR and the beginning of big opportunities for American businesses. Peter Van Dyke reports from Moscow.
20 years ago, U.S. trade with Russia barely existed. It totaled just $2.5 billion. This year, PepsiCo paid twice that to buy Russia's leading juice producer, and Ford and GM now sell tens of thousands of cars here. But the road to success in Russia for U.S. companies has had its twists and turns.
Well, it hasn't been simple. It was complicated by the 90s, which was a mix of rather disorganized efforts at democracy and a market economy.
Andrew Summers is the president of the American Chamber of Commerce in Russia. He says the collapse of Russia's currency in 1998 saw some companies pull out.
Those American companies who stayed recovered well during the Putin years when stability was reintroduced into Russia.
Now, mass protests against flawed elections mean that stability is under threat for the first time in a decade. But the prospects for American companies in Russia look brighter than ever. The World Trade Organization has just invited Russia to join. In Moscow, I'm Peter Van Dyke for Marketplace.
Well, in Shanghai today, hundreds of Chinese are gathering. They're not calling for a new government or economic reform. Their demand is much simpler than that. What they want? To pillow fight. Hundreds of people are getting together for two nights of whacking each other with pillows. According to Reuters, this is the fifth year of the pillow battle. Participants bring pillows with names of bosses and teachers, even exam subjects, and go at it as a way to relieve stress. This could be a good idea for those long holiday return lines today. Now to Detroit, where the city is in debt. This week, Michigan state officials will kick off a three-month formal review of the city's finances. That could clear the way for a state takeover of city management. Marketplace's Gregory Warner reports.
Detroit leaders say the city could run out of cash by April. But that's not even the biggest problem. State officials looked at the city books and found $12 billion in debt and no plan to reduce it.
I don't like to say we're at a crossroads. We're literally in the intersection with traffic coming in every direction.
Luther Keith is executive director of Arise Detroit, a community coalition. He says Detroiters have been long opposed to the state appointing an emergency manager, seen as an outsider. Lou Glazer directs Michigan Future, an economic think tank. He says that a new state law would give that emergency manager unusually broad power to gut union contracts and slash city services. That threat may force public unions to negotiate with the mayor.
now is a real sense of urgency that they've got to fix this. So I think we've gone beyond denial.
Mayor Dave Bing says he can fix the crisis if public unions will accept his deal, nearly $100 million in cuts to wages, health benefits and pensions, and changes to work rules. I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
You've probably heard about the rash of metal theft that's been happening around construction sites and foreclosed homes for a while. It's where people take things like copper pipes and go out and sell it. Well, this next story is the rural version of that trend. Instead of stealing metals, thieves are after animals. Seriously. Turns out in Britain, people are snagging sheep. More than 60,000 animals have been grabbed up in the UK this year, which is three times the usual number. Marketplace's Stephen Beard brings us this story.
Grazing sheep adorn the English countryside, but with lamb prices soaring, the sheep are also a juicy target for thieves. As farmer Robin Dean told the BBC, his entire flock of pregnant ewes was spirited away one night.
Annoyed as much as anything that somebody had actually taken them. You know, they are sheep after all. You know, they're my livelihood.
Most farmers have their sheep insured, but Ben Briggs of the Farmer's Guardian magazine says the sheep thefts are nevertheless distressing.
Farmers have an emotional attachment to them, and if they think they're going into the food chain, have been inhumanely slaughtered, illegally butchered, then that can have a big impact on the farmer on a personal level.
Some of the thieves have even slaughtered and butchered the sheep in the field, leaving the fleece and carcass behind. I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
And finally, a real-life holiday story. A Boston music student forgot her $170,000 violin in the overhead compartment of a bus. The violin was on loan from a Taiwanese cultural foundation. According to Reuters, the student called the police and the bus company to ask for their help, and they found it exactly where she left it in that overhead bin. They returned it to her safe and sound, and she put on a mini concert for the officers who helped get it back. In Los Angeles, I'm Adrienne Hill. This is the Marketplace Midday Update. And this is APM, American Public Media.